3, 2, 1.
And welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club.
We don't need a sync clap if we don't have the beat.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3.
Oh no, you're right, we should do it better. Contact.
Contact.
Cult TV Club.
I've been watching old Doctor Who and Star Trek, and they always kind of do this weird contact scene where the mind meld activates. Like in Doctor Who, they
literally stand next to each other, and then you see a flash contact, of both and faces, then and then it's like
contact.
what are we watching here?
Anyway. Sorry, 3, 2, 1, and.
Welcome to that Classic Cult TV.
I'm sorry.
Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV from 20 years ago and before, and we're here today with Cassandra.
Hey.
Angus.
Hello.
Baylor.
Contact. Sorry, hi.
Lisa.
Oh, I could really smash a Big Mac and a Coke and some fries right about now. Yeah. What about you, Kenzie?
Mackenzie.
Yeah.
Jeanette, could you smash a burger?
No.
Well, I could smash one, yes. I just realised we're doing Cass's
thing
first.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Go back around the room again.
Take 7, reset, original positions, everyone.
And I'm Justin. And,
Do it again.
The opposite direction this time, shake it up a bit.
Yeah, there you go.
Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club.
Take 7.
Take 7. Oh my god.
We could all just say it together if you don't want to say it.
No, that's right.
Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club.
And we're here today with.
Oh my god, that's so early 2000s.
Mackenzie.
Hey.
Lisa.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-bum.
Yay. Oh.
Hi!
Whoa.
Angus.
I think you could have gone deeper on the wall afterwards. That would have made it even more perfect. Hello.
And Cassandra.
Hi.
And we're doing a mystery episode.
No, it's because...
What's the mystery?
I was going to change my mind from what I was going to do earlier, because the show I was going to do originally was going to be one that Kenzie would fall asleep to. So I got if I was going to say I think it's the best TV show of the 2000s, what do you think I was showing?
No, Avatar.
Of the 2000s.
Thing. In one. Avatar The Last Airbender.
You just nailed it straight off. I'm going, Avatar, wasn't that a movie with Smurfs?
No.
Get out of here.
With Smurfs.
It was Smurfs, wasn't it?
Space Smurfs.
He's so offended right now.
The Avatar movie was one of the highest grossing movies ages. I was watching the first kind of episode or something, and I kind of got a bit lost because I was trying to get her into it. But I've never watched Avatar the movie. I've never watched it, as you can tell, because I still think it's got Smurfs in it.
Don't think you're missing much.
Justin's watched the movie. How was it? M. Night Shyamalan?
Yeah, Smurfs.
I was talking about the Avatar movie.
Oh, God,
that's what Justin's seen.
I've seen both, actually.
You have seen both?
Yes.
Didn't we all go and see the...
Oh, I wasn't talking about the Smurfs. I was comparing the live action.
So, let's maybe add a bit of form back to this. Why did you pick
the
Avatar?
Greatest show of theater?
Because it's the greatest show of the 2000s. I just said.
Okay. Does it have any spiritual meaning for you? Was it something that you decided to watch and carried you through your early 2000s because it was absolutely messy after the Y2K, after 9/11 happened?
I should have decided on some type of spiritual resonance with it, but no, it's just a good show.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
That's fine.
That's
completely warranted.
It's a well-written show. It's fun.
Not all of us have trauma. I don't know.
I was screwed up in ways that don't involve trauma somehow.
Yeah,
I didn't try very hard. I tried to get her into it, and then she walked out the room, and I was like, I've got no idea what I'm watching, and we stopped watching it, and that was about it. So I want you to get me and Kenzie into this show because I think that this would be right up her alley because it seems to kind of fit in with the stuff really she's good. Into.
Yeah, so basically...
Everyone talks about how great it is.
Yeah, so basically the world building is that some of the characters in the show are able to manipulate elements, water, air, earth and fire, using martial arts. But the point of it is that there's a lot of complex characters because, say, 100 years ago, the Fire Nation were able to use their fire powers to... started a kind of a mini industrial revolution and started conquering everybody else. And the point is that one of the main characters is the son of the Fire Lord who has to capture the main characters to regain his honour. And he goes from being the villain to being the hero in a kind of a redeeming sort of a way.
His character development is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, because it goes from being one-dimensional, I need to do this thing to save myself, to basically going through a journey of self-discovery and helping the peoples of the Earth Kingdom and finding his purpose in life. And
there's a lot of complex characters that all experience growth and development, including the main character.
Mm. Yeah, because the main character is the only person who can control all the elements.
Oh.
And so it's also like...
Is he the last airbender?
Yes.
Yes.
And his name's not actually Avatar, but he's the last airbender.
Yeah.
And he's bald and he's got an arrow on his head.
Yes.
And his name's not Bender, is it?
Creepy.
No, that's Futurama.
That's Futurama.
The first episode,
right.
He emerged from the void like monkey magic.
Yes.
So that was not lost on me. I'm watching monkey magic in animated form right now, and I'm here for it.
Yes. I think his kind of character archetype is very much the monkey of the group. He's mischievous, he's relatively immature and childish.
Yeah, it's also, he's very much a pacifist, so he's trying to solve the war without actually killing anybody. Because it's like everybody's telling him the only way he can solve this war is to kill the Fire Lord and to conquer people. And that's what he's trying to avoid. So he's trying to gain enough powers to be able to be the Avatar, the one who controls all the elements. Because at the start of the series, he knows how to airbend, which involves a lot of, say...
It's things. A very like specific martial arts.
Yeah,
so it's with its own style, and so adopting the
other. Yeah, so airbending is about being light and being airy. It's not about force, it's about flowing control. Whereas, say, earthbending is very much being solid and being forceful, and firebending is about being energetic and
quick.
Yeah. And
it's kind of based on, there was four different types of movement. This is a drama school thing that it's probably some theory proposed by some famous scholar of acting or something like that. I can't remember. But there's the punch, the flick, the swish, and the other one. And it basically, the earthbending, firebending kind of match that style where the flick is very kind of abrupt, quick, but direct. It's point to point. The swish and stuff and the flows are very kind of airy. Water's stronger, air's more light movement, and then punches, again, forceful, but point to point. And so they're very different aesthetically and stylistically.
And there were 61 episodes, apparently.
Three series.
An hour long episodes?
A half hour.
Half hour?
Yeah.
And, about 2005, apparently.
Yeah, and one of the annoying things was that the channel didn't know how to market it properly, and they just ended up throwing episodes wherever and just have delays.
So they juggled the episodes, did they?
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah.
Was that here in Australia?
No, in the US.
Yeah.
Nickelodeon, apparently.
Yeah.
But eventually Nick cottoned on that wasn't the case of how it's supposed to be showed, and they started running marathons.
Yes.
Which was fantastic.
Which is when I first saw Avatar was, amusingly enough, when we were in a hotel in Malaysia, we'd stopped over on the way back from living in Sweden thing, and there was this pool downstairs, and there was open access and a water park next door, and me and my brothers just sat in the hotel room for like 2 hours watching part of this Avatar marathon, because we really, really enjoyed it, and then, of course, didn't have access to Nickelodeon or anything like that at home, so that was the most we saw of Avatar until recently when Baylor introduced it to me. So I have seen all of Avatar, minus the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Oh, that's the way you should see it. The live-action remakes and adaptations don't exist for me.
Mm, yeah. I can't remember if the Netflix one was okay.
It was received well, but I mean, I would still put it in the pool of it shouldn't exist.
It's an unnecessary remake.
Why remake it when the original's fine?
The reason that they're remaking... So, my sister introduced me to Avatar There's a reason that I'm explaining it this way. She introduced me to Avatar. I love this show. We used to sit down and watch it. It's like Daria in a way. It's very nostalgic.
Yeah.
It just makes me think of her because it's so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that they're looking, at least from her perspective, the reason they're redoing all of this is because there's such a derogative mindset and mentality to animation.
Oh, yeah.
Especially yes. anime. It doesn't matter whether it's anime, animation, and whatever you... Cartoon. Yeah. You can class it, and yep. it, however you class it, people automatically go, oh, it's you're over show. The age of 18. You clearly live in your mother's basement mm-hmm. with your waifu pillow.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what you watch, or it's for kids. And that's okay. the main thing, is that they're trying to make these shows that are absolutely fantastic. I know it was really, really terrible, the remake, but like Death Note, it was to try and get people out there to watch these shows that are actually fantastic.
And dare I say Cowboy Bebop?
Yes. Yeah. Bebop was still done well. It still had that camp pitch sort of vibe. It just didn't need to exist.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The casting was fantastic, but it didn't need to exist at all. But people like my best mate, he won't watch anime, but he really liked Cowboy Bebop.
Yep.
Oh.
And so that's blasphemous in my opinion. But at least he's seen it, I guess, and we've got something to talk about. But it doesn't need to exist.
Yeah.
If you don't want to watch these styles of shows, don't watch them then.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
But
yeah.
they're just trying to make it appeal to a wider audience, which is...
Yeah,
but disgraceful. Yeah. And it's taking also, away from the animation industry as well.
It's also just... Oh, that's a known franchise. It's got followers. So it's a safe investment.
Yes.
Yes.
And business and money should be kept as far separate from art as possible.
Yeah. Yes. Although, this is an aside. Have you heard of Glitch Studios? They do a lot of stuff on YouTube.
No.
Those three series recently, the biggest was the Amazing Digital Circus.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, it's kind of set... How to explain this in short terms? It looks like it was made in the 90s, and it's like a imaginary world. But the point is that all the characters are stuck there, and they can't leave. And if things go badly, they'll basically... What's the word I use? Disassociate.
Abstract.
Extract?
Abstract.
Abstract. Thank you very much, Kenzie. Abstract. And basically no longer be people anymore. So the ringleader, who's called Kane, is trying to distract them with adventures... over the top and ridiculous. The first couple of episodes were very much psychological horror, and the most recent ones are more seeing all the character relationships grow.
Mm.
And it's a really good series. There also been a couple of others, one of which was, I've forgotten the name of it, but the one I saw like last week was The Knights of Guinevere, which is a great satire of Disney.
And so I thought that was a Disney series.
Yeah, no, it's a parody of Disney. Yeah, so there's a lot of cool animation stuff that's niche and got a viewership of, actually... this stuff's pretty big, but there's a lot of niche indie animation coming through. Mm. So it feels like an internet thing rather than a mainstream culture thing.
Yeah.
So this is happening, but it's also very much nobody knows about this show.
Yes. Yeah. Going back to what I was mentioning before, they're doing One Piece at the moment, which is very big.
It's remake.
Yes. Massive.
Yeah, to the point where, random knowledge, they're using the... Well, not the... Sun Crossbones thing, their symbol from that.
Yeah.
In protests in
Indonesia. Yes! I read that recently. Yeah, they're actually, some of these revolutions that are happening around the world, you will see that One Piece flag and it's become a symbol.
Yes.
Almost like the V for Vendetta mask was at one stage. The One Piece flag's doing the same thing.
It's like huge.
The problem is with One Piece is you need to watch 1,000 episodes to get to to get the cultural understanding.
Apparently they're actually redoing the anime so that it's more concise and you're not getting the same... The end of last episode and the start of the end of last episode in the next episode.
So you can binge watch it.
So it's easier to binge, which is great.
Yeah, because life's too short to watch shonen anime.
Yes. Don't get me wrong. I do enjoy shonen. I've got a couple that I like, but you get to a point where you're like, I could skip about 7 episodes or watch every second episode and know what's going on.
The only one I'm familiar with was when I was younger, Dragon Ball Z was on the TV before school started.
Yeah.
So I was familiar with that, but that's the only thing I've actually watched about.
Which is kind of hilarious because you talk about that thing where it's like, oh, I could skip several episodes because they're just repeating the same thing and you're not actually getting to the crux, which is literally what my mum used to say about soap operas.
Oh,
so she was like, I could watch 2 episodes a week and it's okay because they would literally be at the same party talking about the same stuff after skipping three days worth of episodes.
You could skip a year in
those. Yes! Yeah. It's just like, it's great. She goes, I can watch it in the school holidays and I've not missed anything. Like, I'm like, that's not a great show. She's like, oh no, but when it gets to it, it's really great. And I'm like, but what if you miss the episode? She's like, oh, then we'll repeat it. Don't you worry.
That's kind of what a shonen is. It's just... It's more colourful, it's a bit more accessible to people who don't like soap operas, and it can move a little bit more faster paced than a soap opera. But when they hit with things, they hit heavy. Shonens will make you laugh and cry in the exact same breath. It is insane. They just push narratives, and I feel like Avatar could have easily been a shonen. Which is episodic, piece by piece, sort of.
Especially the first season, it feels like they could do an entire 1,000-episode arc just on them going to different places experiencing.
Yes, yeah, there is so much that they could have done, and they to make it more concise, fantastic. It's beautiful. It's an art piece, actual art piece. And get ready to drink.
100% with the critics.
Yeah. Get ready to drink.
World building.
No, even better than world building.
Dave Filoni?
Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Filoni did actually work on book one.
And Mark Hamill was a voice in.
Was he the Fire Lord? No.
Yeah, Fire Lord Ozai. He played a couple of roles. If you read IMDb, he played Fire Lord Ozai, the Fire Lord, Ozai.
Yeah, because he's credited in so many different ways.
But it's the same character.
It's literally the same character.
He's just got seven different titles on IMDb.
So, the guy who plays Luke Skywalker, the original Luke Skywalker, in that time period when the acting stuff kind of dried up, he went into voice acting work and was extremely successful.
Yes.
And played several roles in Avatar:
The Joker.
Last Airbender.
Yeah, he played the Joker.
They reckon he's one of the best Jokers, but he only does the animated ones.
He was.
Because he doesn't look like the Joker, but he...
He was the Joker from the early 80s or 70s or something, right up until
the
mid-2000s
In animation.
He was the Joker. And so when they get other Jokers in, I'm like, oh, is that our boy? Is that our boy Luke? And Angus will be like, no, that's a different guy. But they imitate. They have to imitate him because he set the standard.
And I just remember that one episode that they put online of 5 minutes where they have the Joker and the other characters he voiced. And so literally the only voice in the entire episode is Mark Hamill.
Yes. It's him just bouncing off. It's like the DC version of Jeffrey Combs, who's like every single character in Star Trek.
And going back to Avatar, so this series has got maybe three really poignant things when it comes to writing as well. They've got a character that shows up in a total of 4 episodes and is the most iconic character. He screams, "My cabbages."
Oh yes.
Cabbage man.
But yes. I don't know anything about I've seen this thing out of context online four times.
That's it.
He appears for like 4 or 5 second scenes and that's
it. My cabbages.
Yes.
And that's the only one he has. It's great.
Yeah.
But the characters are really strong. They've got good kind of history and strongly written elements.
And it's also the last season is set in the Fire Nation, and so we had 2 seasons worth of the Fire Nation and the bad guys, and then going in and finding how, say, the propaganda network is getting regular people to buy into this idea of the Fire Nation being great. And so it's never a sense of these are the evil guys, these are the good guys. It's always like these specific people, these specific characters are bad for this reason.
And
it's always nuanced and just like going in and having like a good versus evil one-dimensional thing is not what they do.
And it shows
it's not that mustache twirling all over the bad guys. And you know, it's like they think they're right for this and this and this.
Yeah, and even like say Jet is basically a terrorist from the good guy side of things as well.
Yeah.
He's like
a lot of morally grey characters.
Depth and
dimension to them.
Saw Gerrera from Star Wars is what Jet is like. He can take things really far and push instances to the point that it's more dangerous for everybody than it is good and for the outcome kind of thing.
No one knows who Saul Guerrero is.
It's a Star Wars
movie. We're getting great stares.
Anyway,
but I've heard that the spin-off, Legend of Korra, is supposed to be
No.
It's
also like a very young adult. It's very teenager as
well. Oh, that's more. Oh, yes. So it's for a different demographic. Yeah. It's more of a niche demographic.
It's still great. Mm. Don't get me wrong. It is still great. It falls in the mid to last season, and then it brings itself back up. So it swoops a bit. Avatar is just constant.
So yeah. I've never really been interested in Avatar, but I'd heard it, Legend of Korra is really good. So I'm like, I need to watch Avatar to be able to see what the fuss is about with Legend of Korra.
If you think that Korra is going to be the show for you, watch Korra first, and that will pull you in, and then go back and watch Avatar.
Korra establishes itself strongly as an independent thing. It kind of gives you that environment to begin with.
It gives you nods, but there's no issue with watching something that you think is going to grab you first and then going back to watch the rest of them.
Yeah.
Honestly, you might even get more out of it, in all seriousness, because you see things that happen in the future and you're like, oh, okay, the Avatar is setting and paving a path to get from there to there. So you kind of can go back and be like, aha, there's this, or, oh, I know what happens here. That's cool that that's where that starts, sort of thing. So there is that possibility as well. Mm. That'd be worthwhile. But it takes all, like, the beach episodes, Avatar does, the useless episodes that kind of do nothing that people complain about, and it gives them poignance still.
Yeah.
And gives them reason to exist.
Yeah, because, like, something, the beach episode involves, so basically, introducing one of the seasons is Azula. Azula is basically becomes the second villain from the second series onwards. And that episode basically gives her a lot of backstory to explain why she's, like, the white person she is. And it's, even though she is the villain, we still get understanding as to why she is who she is.
Yeah, and the specific beach episode that Cass is referring to literally goes through everybody's trauma in the Fire Nation, because these are nobles and people that are high-ranking individuals, like kids, and gives them a reason behind why they are the way they are. And it's a very healing episode, but it's also a very showing episode, that these are just people.
Yeah.
And then again, I was also thinking of the time when they beat him in volleyball, and because Azula has been the villain for the entire go, it's like, yes, your humiliation shall live forever, mwahaha, over a volleyball game. Perfect moment.
Yes, yeah, 100%. But it's really, really good.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the music juxtaposes and also sits perfectly within Avatar. So it's just this cool, watery, sort of flowy thing, and then you'll get the beating of the drums and you know things are about to speed up, and it's just sits so well. Whereas with Korra, it's the opposite, I think it is. It's a lot more like fast paced, where it's a bit more calmer, I think it was. I haven't seen Korra in a while.
Yeah, no.
But I've rewatched.
And I think I'm Avatar. Just. And that's the thing, is I just hear this around the traps and I'm like, I hear this is such a great show, but I don't know why and I don't know if it is for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
But what we'll episodes are we watching?
That's the thing. I was tempted to go from the very beginning, but I think if you've already watched this, I was umming and eyeing about a few different episodes. So I might go for the episode which introduces one of my favourite characters, Toph Beifong.
Yes, that's a good episode. Yes.
So watching The Blind Bandits, where we introduced to one of my favourite characters, Toph Beifong, who is cool and rash and awesome and one of the greatest earthbenders in history.
I would love for Kenzie to really love this. I'd love to have an episode that's going to hook her in.
Look, I every episode should hook her in. If it doesn't, we can't be friends anymore.
Well, yes. You walked out halfway through the first episode, so
I'm having this episode.
How old was I?
This was 6 months ago. This is when we first got Paramount.
Okay, so you were 6 months old.
So series two, they're in the Earth Kingdom for the entire series, this entire season.
This is the second series?
This is the second series, yeah. Right, okay. So unfortunately we don't get to see the Fire Nation characters a lot in this episode, which is a bit sad, but yeah, still
I think that's better though, because you're experiencing the main cast
And
developing those emotions with them.
Yeah, and you get to see Toph Beifong, which is awesome.
Yeah. that was the last one.
Yes.
You miss out on Uncle Iroh.
Yes. Best character.
Hands down, best character.
He's basically, so Zuko, his uncle,
Zuko being the Fire Nation hunter.
So his uncle is basically an old wise character. Originally he's seen a bit more comic relief, but he's basically an old wise general who's gone from being a hot-headed whatever to basically being calm and collected and being the
mentor character.
Mentor of also reason, to the point where he's basically the counterpoints, and it helps Zuko to find himself as well. So yeah,
he's
awesome. Yeah,
honestly amazing. A lot of people who've watched it have been like, what would Iroh say at this point in time? He's very cool-headed and a very amazing character.
Yeah, honestly. It's unfortunate we're going to get to see him in this episode, which is... But,
and if you ever want to make someone cry, just start singing Leaves from the Vine.
Oh,
Falling so low. Yeah. Brave little soldier boy.
Okay, you can stop now.
I need to call jazz.
Anyway, let's watch Shemay with her. Yes.
We've spoken for half an hour about it. Let's watch this 20-minute episode. So,
Jeanette, have you seen this before?
No.
No,
no. We have a fresh face.
And have you seen it before?
I've seen it before.
You've seen it before. Come.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode. She's watched 5 minutes of it.
Yep. Okay.
A lot of fresh faces.
Yep.
Yeah.
Off we go.
Water. Earth. Fire. Air.
So that was quite engaging, I thought.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I thought that was really cool. Yay. You're the one I was trying to convince, so. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the mix of humour and the sort of action is all very clever. The characters are multi-dimensional. Very good feel.
Yeah.
Angus, what do you think? You've seen
this show. I like this episode too. I think Toph's character's fun, and I think what we see Toph go through and...
I have to explain what our character becomes without spoiling a lot of details.
Yeah, it is a bit.
But yeah, she becomes the greatest earthbender in history, basically.
Yes. Yeah. It's fun to see the characters, and because they all kind of go through progression and they develop new skills and talents as their journey continues.
So, Jeanette, what did you think? You haven't seen this before.
It was probably a little bit too much action. The story and character was interesting, but a bit too much action for my...
Yeah, so...
sort of zone out through the action stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there wasn't enough personality to the action, you don't think?
Or? Okay, well, so... Yeah. Yeah, it's probably... Like, if you watch the entire series, you'd get more focused on the characters rather than the... much like punching and stuff.
This was definitely a more active episode than most. A lot of them are a lot slower and you get a lot more personality through it. Yeah.
And so I'm not usually one for the action type stuff, but if that's the higher, more action-based one, it was actually done in a really tongue-in-cheek. I mean, we're watching and going, oh my God, they got that from wrestling. One of the characters literally sounded like Hulk Hogan. They had a lot of fun with it.
Because calling him The Rock would have been a bit too on the nose.
Yeah. Of course, I'm so slow. But even with the action, it was very cleverly done and done in a very comedic, tongue-in-cheek way and not violence for the sake of violence.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kenzie, what did you think? Because I'm keen to know.
I think that was really cool because she's one of the characters I thought was in the whole show.
No,
she's just in this episode. It's what, 26 episodes in?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so there are, what, 30 episodes before this?
And I actually didn't know that she was blind. The closest I've gotten to knowing a lot about Avatar is I've read a few of the books I got given. And in those, I don't think it talks about her being blind.
Yeah, because it does pop up occasionally. More like as jokes more than anything else.
It plays around with the joke of other people forgetting she's blind and assuming her ability to see. So in situations like someone will pass her something and it will hit her and she'll go, really?
or Sokka does something really terrible. It's like, everybody's ragging on it. And she goes, I think it looks amazing. That's great. Damn it.
It's not ableistic in any way whatsoever. I think in the earthbending book, they come across a whole heap of airbenders that are... One of them is disabled.
Yeah, wheelchair-bound. Which are you?
Wheelchair-bound.
Yeah.
And it's incredible because his father just goes, yeah, I want my son to live the same life that all the kids have got, so I did this and more. And it's constantly... If they see an issue, they are able to... make the best of the worst situation. Yeah. It's a really affirming show.
Well, I mean, there's a few dickish characters, but in general rule, and because of bending being a gender-inclusive thing, most of it's egalitarian there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that whole thing of, you've got these big, rough, tough, muscly dudes that are just using brute force, but she's just really feeling the energy and she's just kicking their butt by not using the machismo and the brute force that the rest of them are using. So, yeah.
It really touches on spirituality and stuff as well, like following the chakras. They do actually have some spirit-based episodes where it's like you need to feel the flow of your body in order to unlock the rest of the elements and stuff like that. And so it kind of explores that in a easier-to-digest kind of way.
I'm also remembering a few episodes where Iroh teaches Zuko about each of the nations.
And basically saying that
is just like different philosophies regarding life. And how mixing and melding them together is a way to improve them. So it's, how different velocities are derived from earth being solid and water being fluid and air being...
It's why he's the Dragon of the West, I believe. Is it the West or the East?
Yeah.
Iroh's nickname is the Dragon of whichever direction. I think it's the West. And basically he incorporates all the different techniques in order to be able to bend fire and... potentially other elements as well, like other iterations of fire. So that's very cool. And so Toph unlocks a similar style thing, and so they're kind of the frontiers of expanding their bending knowledge. So you're very basic, and then it goes into like, well, if I can bend earth, metal's just a different form of earth. If I can bend fire, that's energy. What's another form of energy, sort of thing? Yeah. And so they go into how using different forms allows you to bend different elements by incorporating other types, which is really cool.
Mm. Well, like one episode where there's blood bending. It's almost like a horror element of one particular waterbender realizing they can bend the blood of the person to make them move in the way they don't want to.
Because blood's just water.
Yeah.
There was a Voyager episode like that. I was thinking, hang on, this seems familiar. But
Familiar.
That was one of the episodes we watched while we were in Malaysia, was the bloodbending episode.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's why it sounds familiar.
Yeah. Like, as kids, we were like, oh, that's so, like, because...
It's so viscerally horrifying.
Yeah, that's it.
I still think this stands up, honestly. There's no question about it. 20 years, I feel like in, like, 100 years, this will still stand up. It's such a clean, polished piece of media. Yeah. Thank you so much for bringing it back.
I was worried about bringing this and just having you just go on this passionate rant about the entire show.
The
first half was half an hour long. The preamble before watching was half an hour long. Yeah. I think we got that out of the way.
And I love it. It's almost like a little bit subdued because everyone's just like, yeah, that was satisfying. Yeah, that was actually really good.
Yeah, it was, right?
Yeah. We have more conversation when we're really irate or one person's not happy and everyone else is. But it's like, we're all agreeing. It's good.
Yeah. We've had a couple of episodes like that where afterwards we've just gone, yep. No notes. That was good. And we just got, oh, we've got nothing to discuss because it just kind of hit every benchmark that it aimed for.
It says here that the themes are very rarely touched on youth entertainment, including war, genocide, sexism, gender roles, imperialism, totalitarianism, class warfare, political corruption, indoctrination, animal cruelty, free choice.
Given everything that's happening now, right? Like, considering the war in Ukraine, the Palestinian and Israel issues, conflicts and stuff like that, and then the occupation of Hong Kong that's been going on forever as well, and rehabilitation camps and things like this. It's bringing that to the children's forefront, and it actually touches on it in different ways. Like, Aang ends up going to school in a Fire Nation and goes, the children of the future, let's try and show these kids that it's okay to dance. Like, it's a Footloose episode, right?
Yeah.
So it's okay to dance. It's okay to meet an airbender.
It's okay to expand your ideas. Yeah.
It's okay to express yourself.
Yeah. And also, on a scale, there's a city in the Earth Kingdom which is censoring everything to the point where nobody in the city knows there's a war on.
There is no war in busing, so.
Yeah. And like, how do you maintain control to stop people, to make this one space of peace in the area being conquered by the Fire Nation? And how does that look like in terms of, say, brainwashing and propaganda? Yeah. And
then you have, like, the
Ministry of Information 1984 stuff. Yeah.
And then you have the greatest general in Fire Nation history go back to Ba Sing Se as a civilian. To live...
The person who led an invasion against
him. And successfully conquered Ba Sing Se, which is supposed to be an unconquerable city, because they have similar... The step walls So it's supposed to be difficult and almost impossible. And so it's got him going back and living this kind of tranquil life of owning a tea shop and just existing. Mm. And so it touches on like just these beautiful scenes of people just trying to live their life as well.
Yeah. Well, it's also an episode where Zuko has a normal life for a bit because he's not the son of the Fire Lord. Mm. And he's not having to fight to prove his honour. He's not having to do this. And he's, it's like a regular person who's just... Yeah.
And is able to take that time out to also deal with the trauma and stuff.
Yeah. So
it touches on those heavy elements, even in the quiet moments.
Then it also talks about loss in the most heartbreaking way because you've got the animals of the world. And so it actually explores their stories as well. And so it will explore like an animal getting kidnapped and the sort of life it goes through. And the anxiety and fear that it feels. And then it kind of wraps it all up eventually at the end of the season where it's like, here is the outcome. The animal is saved, but it goes through all this trauma. And then you see that trauma further on where this animal's like, I don't come near me. I don't trust fire. I don't do that. Like, I'm not okay with this. It helps grow not just the main characters or the villains, but it grows the world, specifically the world.
Mm. Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's really special.
Yeah.
This isn't Japanese-based, is it?
No, it's American.
It is actually American-made.
It's definitely got a lot of vibe of they're drawing a lot from anime. And they're drawing a lot, especially most of the nations are inspired by aesthetics and styles from East Asia.
Well, definitely, I was going to say, it definitely felt like there was an Asian influence, and I just assumed it'd been dubbed over.
Everything that's textual base as well is written in Chinese.
But so basically say the Earth Kingdom is 17th century China and the Fire Nations Imperial Japan and all these aesthetics is just
I assumed it was dubbed as well.
Just because it's got Nickelodeon written at the beginning of it doesn't mean it's necessarily being
created by Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzky.
All the characters have all got Asian names, but I'm like, that's not Japanese names, so that's not come from that area, but it's come
I assume, there were previous voices.
Cultural comparisons have been borrowed from a Western.
Yeah, and there's a few behind the scenes stuff where they go through and explain, for example, how they got a martial arts trainer to go through the kind of martial arts you would have to do earthbending. So that is a genuine martial art movement you see Toph doing in the show.
Okay, that's cool.
It's based upon this martial arts style. Earthbending is based upon this martial arts style. To make sure it's genuine, not just showing, not just
it's
appropriative.
It's such a good example of taking on another culture and not appropriating it, but
honouring it.
Which is something that a lot of cultures struggle with, and they've nailed it perfectly.
That's
quite amazing, isn't it?
I would not have known if you hadn't have said, and I can see a lot of the different areas that they're honouring from different styles, but it doesn't feel like there's a Western
Definitely Western. I've seen a couple of things from people from China saying it's definitely Western style storytelling. So it's the actual stories that it's been told, and the way, for example, say the way the kids wouldn't be as larrikinish as they are, or as full-hearted and obnoxious. So that's definitely a Western thing, but the setting and the...
Some of that could be in the dubbing. Like, it was like all of those wrestling jokes and stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah, they've got the ring girls and stuff, but there was a lot of it. I'm going, oh, yeah, that's just jokes in the dub. We've seen that with Astro Boy. We've seen that with Monkey Magic. Yeah. We've seen that with other stuff. So, yeah.
Dub in new jokes,
and they'll just kind of go, oh, yeah, this is something that American audiences will get. So,
This is the best anime as well, animated show, or just show in general, the early 2000s. They were factually correct on so many different levels. It is recognised by a lot of people that have watched it when it first came out, and even now people are watching reactions of it and loving it.
The second best is probably Star Wars The Clone Wars, but this is...
Drink!
This is definitely the first,
So what food is it? Something Asian that you'd find in...
Oh, God.
Dumplings?
Yeah, something classic that, that actually something that's probably more Western than is actual traditional. Yeah. We always assume is so maybe dim sims or something like that. Yeah.
What were you talking about the other day? Cheeseburger spring rolls.
Oh yes,
they're so good too.
They are really nice.
Cheeseburger spring rolls.
Yeah. Shout out to the Monopara Kitchen.
Okay, so that's the Cult TV Club. Another episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
very glad I picked this because I was going to go with something else, but
yeah.
I'm glad I picked this.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time, yes. Cass, you just go whoosh. Let me just put my A game on the table and just let it sit there.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Apart from that one time when I potentially chose a terrible show.
I see Lex come up sometimes when I'm scrolling through for something to watch on Prime and I kind of go, do I give this one a go?
No.
I see people talking about it in the Star Trek Reddit pages and stuff. Same. And they're like, you've got to watch Lex.
No.
I'm like, what are you people wrong?
Yeah.
Like, what are you people doing?
Yes.
It's one of those ones where you're really glad that you've seen it, you've done it, you don't ever need to watch it
again. Yeah.
I mean, there are a few episodes where I'm like, it might help experience it better, but no, you've done
it. I saw something, same thing, Star Trek Reddit, and they were comparing Farscape to Lex, and I'm going, oh, why would you do that? Because that's not winning the overall.
Yeah, it's because they're on a living spaceship, that's how to compare, but no.
Thanks, everybody.
That was a win. Thank you.
That was so good. Thank you so much for listening to Cult TV Club.